And then I just found out 5 minutes ago, no, it wasn't.
The 30 is released. Do you want that? 30 fiscal.
No, I want the 31.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Debbie. Welcome, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Workforce. Today is Wednesday, May 10th, 2017. And we are, I said the wrong date. Today is the 10th. Sorry. Correction. We're talking about Monday at the same time. So today, what we are going to do is we're going to have a work session on House Bill 2005A. However, we are waiting for the fiscal impact statement to come. It should be here soon. However, we need to have another work session on House Bill 3437A. We're going to just hear this bill solely for the purpose of passing it to another committee. So we're going to go ahead and do that real quickly. So I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3437A and ask Senator Knope for a motion, please.
Chair Taylor, I move House Bill 3437A without recommendation to the Committee on Education.
Senator Knope moves House Bill 3437A without recommendation to the Committee on Education. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Hearing none, the measure is sent to the Committee on Education. Closed work session on House Bill 3437A. So also I wanted to mention that Senator Gelser, unfortunately, is at a funeral today and cannot be here with us, which is unfortunate. And so now what we're going to do is we're going to open up the work session on House Bill 2005A. And I'm going to, instead of having Deborah traditionally has summarized the bill, but I think what we'll do is we'll have Jessica Santiago from LC come forward, if you don't mind. And she is going to explain to all of us what the Dash 31 amendment does. Yes, folks, you heard that correct. The Dash 31. There has been a huge amount of work put on this bill since it came out of the came over from the House, and I really want to thank Senator Knope for working with me throughout the process. And we're very excited about the bill and where we've come, and but I think it's important for everyone to understand what is in the bill, and just so folks know, the last I don't know how many number dashes that we've had where there have been really, really small little changes, but we like to get things right, and so there's some changes that have occurred. So you're not going to go through each of the dashes, right? You're just going to say what's in the final bill.
Right.
Okay. And so when it came over, do you happen to know off the top of your head, or maybe you know, Deborah, where were the dashes at the time when it came over from the House?
26 was the last.
Oh. When it came over from the House, how many of the amendments were from? Oh, that's okay. I was just wondering about the change that occurred over here. So that's okay. We'll go ahead and we'll have Jessica summarize starting from the beginning. What is in the bill?
Thank you, Chair Taylor and members of the committee, Jessica Santiago from Legislative Council. And again, I'm going to walk through what the Dash 31 amendments to House Bill 2005 do. So again, this bill is making it an unlawful employment practice to discriminate in the payment of wages. And with this bill, we're also expanding protections for bringing a discriminatory wage claim. So there's been a list of protected classes that were added. I think we've gone over that in the last time I spoke with you all on a prior amendment. But just to be clear, the protected classes are a defined term under Section 1 of the Dash 31 amendments, and the protected classes encompass a group of persons distinguished by race, color, religion, sex, sexual orientation, national origin, marital status, veteran status, disability, or age. We've added a couple of definitions, one being the equal pay analysis, which we will refer to later on in the amendment. And you can read what it says, but basically it's an evaluation process to assess and correct wage disparities among employees who perform work of comparable character. We also defined veteran status to mean an individual who is a veteran defined in statute under 408.225. So Section 2 basically is where we're making it unlawful to actually discriminate in the payment of wages, and it lists what an employer can and can't do. So basically you can't pay discriminatory wages to employees who are performing work of comparable character, can't screen job applicants based on current or past compensation, basically determine qualifications based on something other than a job-related factor. Notwithstanding all of that, we have clarified some reasons that will actually that an employer can actually use to justify a pay differential. So these are a list of bona fide factors that are related to the position in question, and that list is in Section 2, Subsection 2, and those factors, any one of these or a combination of these bona fide factors could justify a pay differential, so long as one of these factors or a combination of the factors account for the entire compensation differential. And you'll see some of those are seniority system, merit system, travel if travel is necessary, education, training, a system that measures earnings by quality, quantity or quality of production. And again, any one of those or a combination of those needs to account for the entire compensation differential. Another change in these amendments is that, oh, it's the notice requirement for a public body. So notice of a claim, basically a claim alleging discrimination or wage discrimination, that notice to a public body is actually expanded from the standard 180 days to 300 days, so essentially 10 months. So it's gone from 6 months to 10 months. Then moving on to Section 4, it's also an unlawful practice for an employer to seek the salary history of an applicant or an employee. So basically, you can't ask the salary history. Like if you're in an interview and you're interviewing somebody, you can't ask the salary history of that applicant. So that's not to say that it's going to prevent an employer. It's not intended to prevent an employer for being able to basically confirm that compensation if an offer of employment to the employee actually includes an amount of compensation.
Pardon me, sorry, Ms. Santiago. Senator Knope has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jessica, in this bill, is there anything that prohibits an employer from asking a job applicant what they would like to make or what their expectations would be in terms of salary if they were offered the job?
Senator Taylor, Senator Knope, no. So if there's a voluntary disclosure, that's fine. There's no prohibition against that, and there's no prohibition against asking, you know, what are your expectations, I guess.
Great. Thank you.
And I guess this is a good time to talk a little bit more about Section 4. So as you see, this section is a standalone section. And I'll note later, but for now, just bear in mind that this section is going to go, it has an effective date of 91 days after adjournment. So this section is meant to go into effect prior to any other section in the bill. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we move through. It'll come into play with respect to damages that are tied for essentially a violation of this section. Section 5 is talking about the bully complaint process, and what we did here was try to ensure that a violation for a wage claim or alleging a violation of a wage claim is included in the bully complaint process. But we also wanted to make sure that in including that claim specifically, we were not inadvertently limiting any of the other discrimination complaints that are allowed to come into the bully complaint process. So we had to make a change there. So all that we've done here is to make sure that we include a violation of 652220, which is basically the discriminatory wage statutes, bring that into the bully complaint process while preserving the bully complaint process as it has been for all other discrimination claims. Moving on to Section 6, there is a new piece. This is relating to remedies under the BOLI complaint process. So here we've added a provision that if a person chooses to file a BOLI complaint alleging a violation of 652220, again, discriminatory wage claims, and the commissioner has issued a final order in favor of the complainant, that an available remedy is essentially that the commissioner shall require the employer to pay the lesser of the two. So either back pay for the two-year period immediately preceding the filing of that complaint, including the time that the complaint is actually in the BOLI process. So if you're still being discriminated against while your complaint is in that process, you could have, as an available remedy, the back pay for the time that the complaint is in the BOLI complaint process, or for the period of time that the complainant was subject to an unlawful wage differential, so it could be less than 2 years. And again, also for the time that you spent in the BOLI complaint process.
Question.
Senator Hansel.
So the maximum amount of time back is 2 years?
Senator Taylor, Senator Hassel, Hansel, excuse me. Yes, the back pay is limited to a two-year period. Moving on to Section 8, we also added the notice of claim to a public body. This is being added to the unlawful discrimination statutes. It's the same as under the wage claim statutes. It's also a notice of 300 days or 10 months that must be given to a public body. Then, moving on to Section 9, this section now makes it available for an employee to file a civil action under the unlawful discrimination suits. So this bill will basically provide an employee with two avenues. You can file a civil action under the wage claim statutes, which is 652230, alleging a violation of 652220, or you can choose to file a civil action under the unlawful discrimination route. And with that, it expands the available remedies. If you file a civil action under the under the discrimination statute, you now have as an available remedy compensatory or punitive damages, and upon the request of either party, a jury trial. With respect to punitive damages, this kind of limits or sets some sideboards on when punitive damages may be awarded. So it's standard that a court may award punitive damages if it's proven by clear and convincing evidence that the employer engaged in fraud, acted with malice, or willful and wanton misconduct. We've also added, or if there was an instance of a repeat offender. So the language here is a court may award punitive damages if an employer was previously adjudicated for essentially having previously violated the wage claim.
Question.
Senator Hassel.
Does it matter how that previous adjudication turned out?
Senator Taylor, Senator Hansel, well, if I'm understanding your question correctly, it's that employer was found to have been in violation.
Okay.
So is that what you mean by how it turned out?
Yeah. What if he was exonerated and found not guilty?
I don't think that's what this says here. This is like if they've been actually found to have violated that provision. So, and that was intended to cover the repeat offenders.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, if you remember, I spoke about Section 4 being a standalone section and actually going into effect 91 days after adjournment. You'll see in Section 10 that Subsection 2 refers in bold again to Section 4 of this 2017 Act. So this is linking the damages that are available under for a civil action under the discriminatory wage claims those, again, being compensatory and punitive damages. We've written this in such a way so that these amendments will tie, the damages will tie back to Section 4, the compensatory and punitives, but those won't actually kick in until 2024, and you will see that in Section 13. So while compensatory and punitive damages may be available for a civil action filed under this section for a violation of the wage claim statutes or for retaliation of retaliation for a wage inquiry or filing a wage complaint, those damages aren't available for basically the prohibition against asking about your salary history until 2024. So there's a delayed operative date on Section 4. Then the remainder of the bill, Section 12, is an entirely new section, and this provides an employer with an avenue to file a pretrial motion to essentially limit the damages that are available. And essentially the motion is to disallow the court from awarding compensatory or punitive damages for a civil action under either 652230 or, again, the discrimination statutes. And the court must grant the motion if an employer can demonstrate by a preponderance of the evidence that the employer completed within 3 years this equal pay analysis in good faith. And it lays out some criteria that the equal pay analysis must meet, that being that the analysis was reasonable in detail and scope in light of the size of the employer, and that it was related to the protected class that was asserted by the plaintiff in the civil action. And at the time, or by the time that the judge will hear and decide the motion, that employer must have eliminated the wage differentials for the plaintiff and has made reasonable and substantial progress towards eliminating wage differentials going forward for the protected class asserted by the plaintiff. So let's say it's a gender-based discrimination claim. The employer must have eliminated that differential for that particular plaintiff and is showing reasonable and substantial progress towards eliminating differentials based on gender. If the court grants the motion, then there are no compensatory and punitive damages awarded. The award is limited to back pay, again, for the two-year period immediately preceding the filing of the action, and to costs and reasonable attorney's fees. Any evidence of an equal pay analysis is limited to this particular civil action. If an employer has not completed an equal pay analysis, that's not evidence that the employer has violated the prohibition on wage discrimination. And wrapping this up, Section 13, again, is basically saying this is a delayed operative date. So those damages that are available under 659A, 885, with respect to Section 4, don't become operative until January 1st, 2024. So that's a delayed operative date with respect to that section. And then all of the amendments become operative to all of the sections here, the statutes here become operative January 1, 2019. And finally, the last section, which for practical purposes relates just back to Section 4, becomes takes effect 91 days after sine die. So Section 4 will go into effect earlier than the remainder of the bill, which goes into effect January 1, 2019. And that is the Dash 31.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Santiago. You've done a fantastic job and been very, very patient, and we appreciate your hard work. Does anybody have any questions for you? Yeah, Senator Hansel.
The last copy I had previously was the Dash 28s.
Okay.
And I understand there were just a couple of things. Is it easily available to point out the difference between 31 and 28, or is it not information you have at your fingertips?
Senator Taylor, Senator Hansel, I don't have the dash 28s in front of me. I only brought the House bill and the dash 31s.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you happen to remember, Deborah? I think the dash 28 has to do with, we hadn't clarified, there was, I think one of the more significant differences is really clarifying what the bona fide differences, bona fide reasons for a pay differential. Is that, I'm not sure.
So
I think that's correct.
I have one for the differences from each one, from the dash 28 to the 29, then to the 30 to the 31. So
I think the 28 clarified the, but I'm not positive.
So the dash 29.
No, the 28 he's asking.
Well, he's asking what changed since then.
From 28.
Right, so he knows what happened in 28.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm saying that in 28, they clarified the differential for pay work of comparable character. Go ahead and answer that. What do you have what you're trying to find the difference between 31 and 28?
Maybe.
Okay,
I think I can probably get it.
Oh, she's going to, I guess. Do you want to speak to that? Would you like Deborah to speak to that?
I think.
Sure.
Okay, so in the dash 29, and I'll just tell you in order because some things may have changed and then changed again. The dash 29 removed a provision regarding, that had something to do with it, with attorney's fees. That changed around.
So let's be careful here.
Right, it went back.
So, yeah.
And that's why I wasn't going to give the specifics because it doesn't matter. In the dash 30, everything is the same in the dash 31, except the dash 30 had a couple of sections that were making conforming changes. So they're not substantive differences.
Okay.
So the only real difference was attorney fees, but that went away. So there's not a whole lot of difference then, I guess, from the dash 28.
Well, I think I can't confirm, but I think the 28 also between that and the 31 had to do with the bona fide reasons, but maybe that was the 27. I'm not positive.
That's right. There was a clarification, I think, that because it went from saying the bona fide reasons such as, and then it took out the phrase about bona fide reasons, and it just said these reasons, and then it brought back in the phrase that said bona fide. Yeah.
Oh, the fun we've had. The fun we have had. So much fun. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Not a question, but I went back in answer to your question. That last coming out of the House, I know for sure they had the dash fives.
But it was 20.
Was 20?
The murder report was 20.
Okay.
The 20. Okay, that's what I was trying to figure out. Thank you. Was where they, just for fun to see. So now I feel like, oh, we only had 11. Seems, but so thank you. And I think we're going to go ahead and hear from the House members who had the bill. So I think that, are we good with Jessica?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. So let's call up Representative Leininger and Representative Hack. And they can speak to the bill. And I owe so much to both of these wonderful women who are my fellow legislators. And Representative Leininger, thank you so much for working with me. And I really appreciate that. And I know that Representative Hack has also been involved as well and working hard on this. So it's great to have both of you.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here and to be here in this posture. I'm Ann Leininger, State Rep for House District 38, Lake Oswego, and Southwest Portland, and I'm one of the chief sponsors on the bill and have had the pleasure of working with Senator Chair Taylor and Senator Knope and Senator Gelser with her great input and a lot of the wonderful people sitting in this room, many of whom started working together on this project in August of 2016, around the time we were learning about the important, impressive work that Massachusetts had done to pass a bipartisan pay equity bill. And a lot of the elements from that bill sort of formed the initial backbone of our bill. And we had, over the summer and in the early fall, meetings with allies on both sides of the employer-employee kind of continuum, and legislators from a range of perspectives, and people who liked the ideas and people who didn't like them, and business people, and workers who felt like they had experienced some of the very concerns and problems that we're working to resolve. And we We did a lot of refinement, and Representative Hack offered some great input, and together we worked on negotiating as much kind of common ground as we could at the point at which we passed the bill out of the House. And in the House, you probably will recall that we had just barely a bipartisan vote. I think we had only one Republican on the bill. And it was one of our, it was probably the only really kind of hot floor debate we've had so far this session. And I remember when I was giving my close, and I was thinking, yeah, you know, when I've seen other legislators give a close in a situation like this, sometimes, you know, people are kind of winding up for the final sort of assertions to put everything away that don't always build the sense of teamwork going forward, but, you know, kind of get to the other end of the floor debate. And I remember thinking, you know, we had a lot of common ground in the, we passed the 2005-5, but there were many moments, thanks to advocates on both sides of the employer-employee set of relationships, there were many points that we believed we could get to common ground on. And at the time when I was making my closing, I decided that what I would say is something more like, you know, there are good people with a range of views on this, and I am committed to trying to work to find more common ground as it moves forward in the Senate. And my perception of Representatives Hack, her great work, is that she had a similar sentiment. So you have given us a chance, and the allies for workers, advocates for workers, and the allies and advocates who also represent employers have all given us the chance to work together to explore that common ground and find much more of it. And I would say, as we sit here today, I feel like we've gotten really far toward a better bill. And, you know, probably 90% of the elements are elements that we talked about in a room, you, me, Amanda, and someone who might be on your staff. But the 10% or so that is new is really important, and I want to credit you, and I want to credit the other folks in the room. But the creative thinking that you helped lead, Chair Taylor, enabled us to find a path forward on the pay study that I think is really important. And you had the insight to contact some outside experts who didn't really have a vested position, you know, in the conversation we'd been having. And that was a great move. And I love the resolution, and Senator Knope, I think you were key in this also, that a good pay study, because we want to prevent problems before they happen, right? We all agree that it's much better for workers to not experience the trauma of having to contend with a lawsuit if we can avoid the problem on the front end. You know, a good pay study that is relevant to the person who's aggrieved, where the person who's aggrieved has been made whole, and that can only protect the employer from potential exposure to compensatory and punitive damages, but does not foreclose the ability of an aggrieved employee to get made whole compensation and attorney's fees and costs, is a great path forward. And you know, I think we all feel kind of bruised because it was hard to get from the -20 to the -31. But it involved great compromises, and I think you even strengthened, I know you hear this all the time, but I think the Senate may have strengthened the social justice aspects of this bill. Yeah, I mean, this Boley claim, the Boley process in which you could potentially recover for the period of time in which you're in Boley, again, because it's nice to avoid court if you can avoid court, is a really good idea. The idea that punitive damages are available if you're an adjudicated multiple-time offender on the employer side is a good idea. It helps people decide not to do it. The idea that the rights are posted in an employer workplace, those are all Senate innovations that I think strengthen the bill for workers in addition to good elements that were in the bill coming forward. So I want to thank you. I want to take a second to thank, in addition to the senators I've already mentioned, I want to thank Anna Braun and Greg Alderson, who as staff did tremendous work. Jessica Santiago and Gail Stevens and Dexter Johnson did great legal support. Amanda Dalton I've worked with closely on this, and Betsy, but I know that a whole bunch of business side advocates have had a strong role, including Evan Andres and others. in helping with this. And on the in the worker ally side, I want to call out Kate Newhall and Trish Garner and Lori Cremona Wagner, and I'm forgetting a lot of people, but my staff, Alan Van Vliet and Mark Bond, have done a great job too. So it's bruising and we're kind of exhausted, but you have done important work getting this to a place where it's going to be much better than it was when we got it to you. And for that, I really thank you.
Okay. Sorry about that. I apologize. Okay. Thank you. We're trying to get the fiscal, never a dull moment around here, so I apologize. Thank
we're
you for that.
We're just filling time because we figured, you know, you're waiting on this.
That's right.
It's almost Mother's Day, so I also wanted it. No.
Yeah. Okay, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, State Representative Jody Hack. And, you know, I could go back through everything that Representative Leininger said. You know, I'm really here to be in solidarity with her and to thank her for the great work that we were able to do together. And I would agree, and when it came down to the minority report, you know, you hate to do that. We did it, yet at the end, I felt the door was still open, and you did an amazing job of making sure that your clothes indicated that, and I respected that, and knew that we'd have the opportunity to continue the work on this side. And so I wanted to commend Anne for her willingness to do that in the end, because she didn't have to. And again, I have great respect for her and for how she handled that. And you all as well. And I just wanted to say thank you for your hard work. This is a great piece of legislation. And I would agree with her that we started out with something that was on its way to being great, and it ended up even better. It was something that we thought we might be able to get the stakeholders to neutral. And the fact that they are now in support of it is a huge take home for so many who that this will affect. So I just wanted to not take a ton of time, but just wanted again to reiterate that the process, oftentimes people think it doesn't work. This is a case of it does work. And this is why we have the House and we have the Senate, and good people come together and work for the common good. And this is a prime example of how it really can and should work. The process really did. And so I'm just so excited that it gets to come back to our side, and we get to stand on the floor united and come together and vote yes on a great piece of legislation. So thank you. And again, thanks to everybody that Anne previously mentioned also.
Chair Taylor, may I mention one more person?
Yes.
Whitney Stark did a tremendous amount of work.
Yes, of
and wanted to note that too. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, I really appreciate that.
And thank you.
Okay, so we're going to just stand at ease for one moment so I can talk to Senator Knoop for a second, please. Okay, so we are back. Just for the record, Senator Knoop and I were having a conversation, and Senator Hansel was talking with someone else. We were not, the three of us were not convening in the hall, just to be very clear. So, folks, after all that, Dash 31 fiscal is not ready. We have the revenue impact statement that says there is no impact. The Dash 31 fiscal is not. So what we are going to do is, not at this moment, but we're going to need to suspend the rules to pass the bill out of committee, because we have the Dash 30 fiscal impact statement. And is this on OLIS?
Not yet, but we can do that right now.
Well, because just so people can look at it and see, because there's literally just a tiniest bit of language change between the 31 and the 30, but the folks in LFO are not able to get the Dash 31 out right now. But I just wanted folks to be able to see the Dash 30 and to put it on the record, so that if you want to read it, to see that there is that's a minimal impact. So what we'll do now, though, before we vote, before we suspend the rules and vote, is that we're going to ask that if Ms. Dalton and Ms. Earls could come up and talk about the bill if they feel comfortable, if they'd like to do that, of course, and that would be great. And then we'll have, after that, we'll have Ms. Newhall. And Ms. Gardner, did you want to speak in support of the bill? Or if you were, it's okay, we just have Ms. Newhall come up afterwards. Okay. So, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries and the Oregon Business Association. And we are before you today to express our support for House Bill 2005A as amended, or as about to be amended, hopefully, with the Dash 31 amendments. We have very much appreciated working with you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Vice Chair on the bill, as well as the proponents on the House side and Representative Hack. We appreciate the flexibility and the willingness to work through details over and over that you have shown on this, and your interest in the concerns that employers have expressed on the bill in order to make it workable for the business community. So at this point, we are in support of the bill and look forward to working with you further on it. Thank you.
Chair Taylor and members of the committee, Amanda Dalton on behalf of the Northwest Grocery Association, and I just echo a lot of what you've heard today. I think there were probably days last week when we didn't think we would get here, and so we're glad to be in the place that we are, and think the Dash 31 before you really reflects a good compromise between all parties. And I think everyone walked away knowing that we didn't get everything we wanted, which is probably a good example of good work. I did want to just clarify that or point out that I think one of the most substantial changes for us in the employment community was really clarification around the allowances for pay differentials and really cleaning up that section to show that an employer can look at kind of education, training, and skills and experience, work location, travel location, those kind of things. But then also to really take that proactive step that you've heard a lot from us about the employers wanting to do the right thing. And this bill allows them a year and a half now to go out and figure out what's going on within their workforce and really make those changes before any kind of penalties and civil penalties really kick in. So we appreciate that time and flexibility. So thank you.
Okay, great. And thank you both for all the hours that you put into working on this. There was a lot of last-minute phone calls coming to my office and Senator Knope's office, and we appreciate that. So, okay, Ms. Newhall. Oh, Ms. Gardner, yes, please. We'll have Ms. Gardner, Ms. Gardner, why don't you go first, and then we'll have Ms. Newhall finish it up for us, and then we'll vote.
Okay, Patricia Garner on behalf of American Association of University Women, Chair Taylor and members of the committee. As I sit here today, I think of the fact that for American Association of University Women, that it was 1896 when it came out with its first public policy report, which was about pay inequity. So I sort of get a little bit of chills when I think about that history and how long we've, not myself, of course, but our organization has been working on this particular issue. And so it is with that great sense of history, really, and gratitude that I want to extend on behalf of AUW our thanks. I know I've met with each of you, and we didn't always agree, but I always felt that all of you cared. All of you perceived the problem and really wanted to do something about it. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart, and AUW does as well. We look forward to future work with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ms. Gardner came, was it last summer you came? And so we sat in a coffee shop, and I said, yes, I agree, we have a problem. So I appreciate it. You've put a lot of work into this and a lot of passion behind everything that you've done. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Ms. Gardner. Ms. Newhall, rather, sorry.
All right, Chair Taylor, members of the committee, for the record, Kate Newhall with Family Forward Oregon. Here today, very excited to be testifying in support of the Dash 31 amendments. I also want to recognize, as others before me have, all of the incredible amount of work that has gone into this by both the House and then by this committee. I know it was many, many hours from Senator Taylor, many hours from many of the business community and the advocates for the bill, and really going through it with a fine-tooth comb to make sure that we're getting the pieces right. And yes, there were several amendments, most of them to exactly make sure that we had come down and gotten all of our details correctly. So I will say and sort of echo what Ms. Dalton said, and that, you know, we probably didn't get everything that we wanted, but I think at the end of the day, we feel like we have a very strong bill that is a very good bill, and I think that's something that this committee and everybody who's worked on it can feel very proud of, and look forward to seeing this pass. So thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, committee members, are we ready? All right, so we are in a work session, and so first we need to adopt the Dash 31 amendments. So I'm going to ask, do we need to have you summarize the Dash 31 since Jessica already did? I don't think that we need to do that.
It's up to you.
Do we need to, are they asking each other there?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. So, Senator Knoop, can I have a motion, please?
Chair Taylor, I move to adopt the A31 amendments dated 5/10/17.
Senator Knoop moves to adopt the A31 amendments dated 5/10/17. Is there any discussion? Senator Hansel.
Just have a question on process.
Yes, sir.
Maybe I was not paying enough attention, but did we actually move to suspend the rules?
We are going to do that shortly, sir.
Well, I thought we had to suspend the rules before we moved to...
We can
adopt... Just for fiscal.
Just for the fiscal. We're just going to adopt the amendment, and then before we move it to the... move it out of committee, I believe is the case, correct?
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep. Thank you, Senator Hansel. So, any other discussion? Any objection? Sorry, I had to pause there for a moment. There's been so many little tiny changes throughout this process. I don't want to mess anything up here. So hearing none, the amendments are adopted. And then let's go ahead, and I'm going to ask Senator Knoop for a motion for suspension, please.
I'll take a whack at it. Oh, you've got a script?
Ready for you.
Better. I was just going to go from memory. Chair Taylor, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 2005A without having a fiscal impact and revenue impact statements on hand at this time. We have revenue bill, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Vice Chair Knoop moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 2005A without having the fiscal impact statements on hand at the time. Those are the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action.
Question.
Yes.
2000A as amended.
You bet.
2005A as amended.
As amended. Okay. So let's ask for the motion again.
You bet. Chair Taylor, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 2005A as amended without having the fiscal impact statement on hand at this time.
Vice Chair Knoop moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 2005A as amended without having the fiscal impact statement on hand at this time. Those are the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 2005A as amended without having the fiscal impact statement on hand at this time will say A, and those opposed will say no. Motion carries and the rules... Go ahead. So I just want to make sure that the motion will carry, so everyone understands that will be your final time. That will be your final moment. When you say that, you are having your final moment. You have no... Oh, I think we're going to... Well, to me, it's fine. Go ahead.
You want me to vote aye?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Aye. Taylor votes aye. Motion carries and the rules have been suspended. So I just want to make sure everyone understands what they just did. So now let's ask for the next motion, please, Senator Knoop.
Chair Taylor, I move House Bill 2005A as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Right. I said as amended. Right?
The second time you did.
Okay. Oh, I didn't say it a second time. I'm going to go again. Chair Taylor, I move House Bill 2005A as amended. It's not on the script, but I'm doing it anyway. As amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. As amended. As a due pass, as amended recommendation.
Okay,
Senate, I just really don't like the way that's worded. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So Senator Knoop moves House Bill 2005A as amended to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there a discussion? Okay. The clerk will call the roll.
You don't want discussion?
She asked for it.
Oh, she asked for it. That was quick.
That was. I'm asking
the
clerk.
I guess we got places to be.
Yeah, we do.
All right.
Senator
Bielser? Who's?
Excused.
Excused.
Senator Hansel?
Aye.
Senator Mona Sanders?
Aye.
Vice Chair Knoop?
Aye.
And Chair Taylor?
Aye. The motion passes, and I will carry the bill. The close work session on House Bill 2005A as amended. And we will be meeting again on Monday. You'll see the agenda coming up for those who are tracking that. We haven't posted that yet, but there'll be some bills on Monday we're hearing. We're going to adjourn the meeting on the Senate Committee on Workforce. Okay.